I was allowed to spend one day a week on research, whatever I liked. Last January I started with research on electronic passports, and this presentation is a summary of the results of that research. So these are the items I would like to cover today. A technology overview. So that's for the people who aren't familiar with e-passports, or to refresh your memory. We will cover some attacks, including some attacks in the past. We will look at the root causes of the findings. Of course, we will take a look at solutions, how to fix the situation. We got a sneak preview of the future, because lots of things are happening in the world of e-passports. And if you got questions, please save your questions for the end of the talk, so we can discuss them at that time. So first, a technology overview. An e-passport is a normal passport as we know it for many decades, including a chip, and that's new. And the chip contains data about the passport holder. So what you normally see in a passport is some printed data and a picture. That's also stored in the chip. It's an international standard, so the ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, describes the standard, and chips comply with this standard, so they work like described in this standard. At this time, about 45 to 50 countries are enrolling chips, or chips are already enrolled. Though real-life applications are not out there. So we see some test applications, but no real border crossing applications, for example. And this will probably change in the near future. So what does it look like? Here you see a test setup at Amsterdam Airport. So here are two departure platforms. And this is a corridor, and this is a publicly accessible setup. And we'll take a look at this setup later. This is another setup in Portugal, also a test setup. This one is more sophisticated. Perhaps you can see it. These are automatic sliding doors. And there are some more additional elements in the setup we will discuss later. So what is in the chip? The standard describes what is stored in the chip and how it should be stored. I see this like the My Documents on your computer. It's just a collection of files. The most important files are the DGs, what you see here, which stands for Data Group. And there are at least two data groups in each chip, and possibly 16. So that's the data. Then we also got some other supporting files, like the security object. And the security object is used to see if data has changed. the last file is ef.com, and ef.com is the index of the available files. So look at it like if you do dir or ls on your computer, this is the same, but then for a passport. Now, what does it look like? This is an ARFID reader. You can buy it for about $75 US dollars. This is an identity card, which is the chip is the same as the chip in a passport. So we got this in Holland since 2 or 3 years. And here I read the data using RFIdiot, which is a tool from Adam Lowry, a guy from the UK. And you can download this free of charge from the internet and also check this yourself. So some data is obfuscated. So you cannot find my passport number, for example. This is the content of the chip. And we were talking about the data groups. This is data group 1. This part. And this part is data group 2. This is the picture. And these two are in every passport. Should be every passport. Then, of course, the standard also covers security. Because what we don't want is that data can be changed and that it isn't detected by the inspection systems. So there are a number of security mechanisms, and three of them are relevant for this talk. See them over here, the larger bullets. The first one is passive authentication, and it's used to safeguard the integrity of the data, so to detect changes. So that's this one. Then we got baseless access control. It is optional, though it's used in all chips I've seen so far. Used to safeguard confidentiality of data, so people cannot read your data from the air. Or perhaps they can read it, but they don't know what it is. So think about it like some kind of SSL or SSH for passports, a secure channel. And the last one is active authentication. It's also optional and is used to prevent cloning or to detect emulators. So what the use of this system is that they can determine whether they're talking to a real document or to a fake document with real data. To visualize the three mechanisms, this is passive authentication. So what you see, this should be the real document. And if the chip content is okay, then it says the document is genuine. If I replace chip data, for example, another picture, what happens then is that passive authentication, the security object stores the hashes of all files. The hashes of the files which are read from the chip are also calculated in runtime. And they should match. So for example, if this is another picture, the hash value is different, and it can be detected that this is not the original content. Of course, what you can do is also update the hashes in the security object. But to prevent that, there's also a digital signature made of the hashes. So if you change the hash in the security object, then the digital signature is incorrect and it will still be detected. To check if the signature is made by a trusted party, there's also a public key in the security object, which allows you to check if the signature is a signature by a trusted country, made by a trusted country. Then we got basis access control. So it might be a risk if someone's got a sensitive antenna and eavesdrop on this data. To prevent an attacker from getting access to confidential data, this channel is secured. To do that, it uses a key. So you got to authenticate to the chip before you can read it. And the key is made up of your date of birth, your date of expiry of the document, and the document number. That data is all stored in the two lines here. This is also an international standard. This is called the machine readable zone. So what this setup is doing is it's reading with the scanner, it's reading this data. It digitizes this data, it extracts the key, and then it authenticates to the passport and reads it. There are also some randoms introduced, both by the inspection system and by the passport, to make replay attacks or rainbow table-like attacks more difficult. Then we got active authentication. It is optional. As far as I know, it's used by about 20% of the countries. And for example, the Netherlands is using it. So in this document, in this chip, it is enabled. And what it's doing, so if you're talking to the real document, then it says it's okay. And if you're communicating with another document which looks the same, it says, well, this one is not okay. Now, why might it be a handy feature to add some more functionality to a passport? This is an example. This is a grandmother who's flying to a holiday location on the passport of her husband. She already passed a number of security checks before it got noticed. So if you use chips, you might be able to automate parts of the control to prevent this kind of things from happening. And we got some known attacks. At Black Hat 2 years ago, Lucas Grunwald gave a demonstration on cloning a passport, so on fully cloning it. And he did that by making a bit-by-bit copy of all files in the passport. This can be prevented by using active authentication. So then the system would detect that it's not the real passport it's communicating with. Another attack is made by Mark Witteman at What the Hack in the Netherlands. And what he did was checking the power consumption and the timing of the smart card which is in the passport. And using that side channel information, he was able to retrieve some secret keys from the passport. So for example, if you perform an RSA calculation, then multiplying takes longer than adding values, and using that you can determine which key bit is a 1 and which key bit is a 0. Well, this can be prevented using proper hardware. So what they do is put big capacitors in the chip so the power consumption doesn't change. And for example, they can also insert random wait states so the timing also looks random. Then we got an attack with predictable numbers. Lori from the UK made some software to read passports, which I just shown. And the Home Office replied and said, well, you've got to have the key information and you can't have that. Then you got the passport already, so what's the problem? So what he did was he got, or a reporter got a new passport with a chip in it. And the document number in the UK were sequential. So the first passport, the number of the first passport was 1, the second one was 2, the third one was 3, etc. Then he brute forced the passport number of the reporter's passport, which was sealed in an envelope. And after 2 days, he guessed the right key. And he could read all data on the passport. The last one is about fingerprinting passports without authenticating. So if you don't know the right key, you can still send some garbage to the chip card. And depending on the implementation, the card will respond with different error codes. So if you send, for example, some strange data to a Japanese passport, it responds in a different way than a Dutch or a US version does. And so actually it's something like AMAP, but then for passports. Then the verification process, this is the setup again, which we've seen in Portugal, with some highlights. So first we see the RFID reader is integrated in this device, including an optical scanner. So what it's then doing is checking if the image which is scanned looks like the image on the chip. What it then does or should do is prevent all of or process all security checks. And it also, over here, you see a camera. and then it checks if the person who's present at that time matches the picture in the passport. I had a delayed flight, so I asked the guy, this is a test setup, so is it working probably? And he said, well, you're from the Netherlands, you're quite tall, so if we're taking a picture of you, we take this part, and it doesn't match your picture, so then it doesn't work. And you can also have Spanish girls in general are quite small, so you take a picture of their hair, and then we also got a problem and got to check manually. But for the rest, the test looked good, or at least that's what he said. Well, to see what Dutch software is doing, this is some non-public software which is also tested by Border Control. And this is the Minister of Justice from the Netherlands. And the fun is he visited the department which is developing the software or using it. And they made some high-resolution pictures and placed it on a government website. But the pictures were like 10 or 20 megapixels. So if you zoomed on a picture, this is actually just a part, you can get all this personal information out of the picture. So this is what you can also see, it's a diplomatic passport. So it's also a government passport. And what you also can see is that they're performing a check for the scan data over here and the data on the chip, which is stored in color. Well, if you want to find flaws yourself, you need a test setup. These are the ingredients you need to create that test setup. So this is the ARFID reader, which is about $75. Then you need a laptop computer or another computer. Software development environment, Eclipse, you can download it for free. And you got extensions that it's, you can use it for smart cards. Then you need some smart cards. This is one. They're about $20 each. And you see a chip on it, but there's also a wireless interface in it. And this is the hardware. It's like brother or sister hardware from the original hardware used in the passports, at least in the Netherlands. They're also using Java cards for this. Then the last part is a printer with an integrated scanner, which you can use to print some altered documents. First, what you need first is some code that emulates a passport. And you can do that by just following specifications ICAO published. So this is public information. And this is a worked example. So this is an example they use to show you how you should read the chip. Of course you can reverse this, and if you reverse this, you know what the chip is doing. So that's what I did. Then you also need to add some functionality to write to the chip. because normally the chip is written once, and the passport data shouldn't be changed. If you're trying to test the system, you want to rewrite the data so you can use it over and over again. You can test it quite easily using RFIDIOT. So you perform a readout of a real chip, for example this one. Then you copy all the data and you see, you set the random number generators to a static value. And then you check if the two outputs match. And if that's the case, then your emulator is working correctly. If not, you can find bugs and try again. To give you an idea what it looks like, this is some source code of the applet. It looks like Java. It's called Java Java Card. It's not exactly the same. And so what it's doing, for example, in this method is just wait for input and then it checks what to do. So if we get a command which start with 00 and then A2, then probably we're setting keys, so we want to go to the set keys routine. I just mentioned the word example, and this is what the implementation is of the word example, but then the other way around. If your emulator is working, then you need some reference implementations. So you got the Golden Reader tool, which is a tool which is referenced in ICAO documentation. So they say if you want to make a chip and you want to test it, use this software. This is good software. Of course, you can also use real-life setups, which are not out there that much, but some test setups are available in the Netherlands, for example. If that's, if you found the test software, you can try to attack the system with three steps. First, you got to successfully attack the optical scanners. So the part that translates lines below to digital data. Then you got to attack passive authentication. So with the hashes and the signature. And then for example Dutch documents, you need to attack active authentication. So to prevent the system that it detects that it's dealing with a clone. To attack an optical scanner, you can first retrieve some OCR fonts. The two lines on the bottom of your passports are intended for reading, being read by a machine. And there's a special font for it. Then you can copy and paste the picture in the right place if you want to. So this is, I found this picture on Google Images. So using this you might pass a check for chip content versus the printed content. After some earlier talks, I've been invited to some companies who also make very advanced equipment. Unfortunately, that equipment is not used by the government, as far as I know. But they're performing some really advanced checks. So, for example, in your passport there are some infrared stamps and some stamps which can only be seen using ultraviolet light. And it checks if all those characteristics of the printed documents were correct. So, for example, in Dutch documents, there's also perforation in your document showing your picture. I don't think you can see it, but over here is the picture also with lasers also burned or stamped in the real document. The funny thing is, this is not used in test setups. And if your passport is expired in the Netherlands, you get a new one, but first you got to give them your original one. And then they make it unusable using three holes in it. So this is an expired passport. The funny thing is that the holes are on places which are not important. So there are some characteristics, including infrared, ultraviolet stamps, all that kinds of stuff. And they're all not on the places where the hole is. So they're here, here, and here. So I tested the advanced equipment using this simple expired passport, and the only message the system told me was that it was expired. A demo of how it worked out is included later on. And if you can't get it working, you can all, if you're a criminal, you can try to get some fake passports, or in this case, real passports. So in the United Kingdom, in July, 3,000 blank passports and visas were stolen. So they were in a car which was parked outside the company which prints the documents. And it was probably targeted by some criminals who knew what they were coming for and took all the documents. And obviously the characteristics of the printed documents for these documents are real, because we're talking about real passports. It's interesting to see that there was a note in this article. And it says the passport service said the stolen documents could not be used by thieves because of their high-tech embedded chip security features. Then first, after the attack on the optical document, we want to try an attack on passive authentication. And the main question is, are we talking about warnings or are we talking about errors? So is this a warning or error? And this is Jorge Lorenzo, Spanish MotoGP driver. And he fell off his bike during qualifying. He broke one or two ankles. Actually, he joined later on in the race. He couldn't walk, but he became fourth. That's interesting. But I think it's an error. Another one. A warning or error. This is a Formula One car during the Grand Prix of Canada last year. And this is Robert Kubica, and as you can see, the wheels are everywhere, and He had a high speed crash. Warning or error. The 1 year later, by the way, he won the same Grand Prix. Warning or error. This is an operating system, and what they call the blue screen of death. So something probably went wrong, and I think, again, this is error. And the last one, this is a Boeing 747 in Belgium some few months ago. It's a cargo plane, and yeah, something went wrong. So if we're attacking passive authentication and we're talking about the digital signature, if it's incorrect, do you think it's a warning or an error? And if it's an error, if it's a critical error or a non-critical error? I thought that it should be would be a critical error, but when I checked, it seemed to be a non-critical error. So what you see here is a red cross, which of course is good. But this is one of the first checks, and one of the last checks is downloading the picture, and it continues reading the picture and displaying all data, even though it detected that something went terribly wrong. What will happen if the hash value is incorrect? And of course the first thing to try is to change the picture, and the other picture will generate another hash, and yeah, we'll see what will happen. So again, do nothing, or B, a warning, or C, a non-critical error, or D, a critical error. I thought again that it would be a critical error, but it seems that it's a warning. So if you take a look here, you see a red dot, and the red dot means that the hash value is incorrect. That's it. So in my opinion, that was very strange. So if the reference implementation, so these screenshots are taken using the software which should implement the checks like they should be. If they are not that strict, what about real setups? So I found out the location of a couple of test setups, went there with a camera and with a collection of prepared chips to see what kind of warnings or errors were generated using the fake chips. So this is the manual, how the system works, and this is in a town hall. This is my identity card. I'm reading it. And some guys were also working behind this. And this is the data of my chip, it's blurred a bit. This is my real passport. But there isn't a chip in it, and it doesn't work, because there's no chip in it. And then I put a card behind it with an emulator in it, which triggers on the data printed on my passport. And that is not me. And since we're in Japan now, I think let's make a localized version. So this one is taken 2 days ago, I think, Schiphol Airport. So this is a passport self-scan. So this is the one we saw earlier. So here you see the instructions again. And what you see here is this document, so with the holes in it. So it is not a valid passport anyway, so also the printed document looks quite bad for a passport. And what you can also see here is that I put again an emulator card on top of it. So again, it's reading it, it's the same kind of equipment. It looks different, but it's the same. And that again is not me. What you can also see, for example, is that the nationality for this chip is Japanese, while the data of the original passport, this one, is Dutch. Actually, this is the old one of my girlfriend, who's also named Kitty. What you can also see is that the date of birth might be correct. Date of expiry, yeah, takes a long time, 2038. Well, the good thing about this setup is that it isn't used to check passengers. So it's a test setup, and the government also replied that, well, yeah, this is a test setup, so you cannot request any kind of service with it. So I asked them, from what will you do for the official equipment or newer equipment? And they said, we will enroll it next year, and it will be secure. Then I asked them, how do you know that it will be secure? Have you got some kind of design documentation? Because ICAO perfectly describes how to check chips. And it seems that only a few of none of the checks are implemented in the setups we've just seen. So I was also quite surprised, because I went there with like 8 of these cards with different type of error messages, or that's what I expected, and they were all accepted. So they responded my question about the design documentation, that there is no design documentation. So they, the party who is making the machines will know what's good for them. That's what I said. And I think that's very dangerous, leaving that kind of important decisions to a party in a market. And this is a more strange thing you see here.
So this is Elvis. This is the date of birth and the expiry date is 77. So that's actually the day he died.
And that's more than 30 years ago already. So the passport expired 31 years ago, or it's valid until 2077. Obviously, again, like the Hello Kitty, USA doesn't match Netherlands. The passport number doesn't match my number. And the pictures also don't match. So, like I said, I went here with a couple of test data sets to see what will happen, and they were all accepted. Obviously, this is detected by the Golden Reader tool. Golden Reader tool implements passive authentication in a good way. So what we see here is again what passive authentication is doing. So we got a public key in a security object. And you can also see it. Like this is some printable certificate info. So the public key is from the organizational unit, Ministry of Interior and Kingdom Relations. Organization, State of the Netherlands, Country, Netherlands, etc. So that's in there. And we got a list of hashes in it. So for every file, the hash is calculated, stored, and signed. The last and most important check is seeing if the signature is generated by a trusted country. And to do so, ICAO enrolled a public key directory, so which is a database which should store all the public keys which are trusted. So if everything is correct, the hashes are correct, the signature is correct, then you check if the key is trusted. At this time, there are chips enrolled in about 45 countries, including the Netherlands, including Japan, for example. And ICAO said in April 2006 that PTD membership should be necessary and not optional. Which, of course, is a very good thing. Then you can also download some meeting minutes from ICAO. And last May, they said that there were only 9 countries who signed up to the public key directory. And of that 9 countries, only 5 are actively using it. That just that shouldn't be a problem, because there's also a fallback mechanism. And a fallback mechanism is, this is a quote, distributed by strictly secure diplomatic means. I think that's dangerous, because it's a manual process that's prone to errors. And the test setups we've seen, for example, are running Windows XP, I think, or at least Windows. So if they're not adequately patched, you can own one of the boxes, update the local certificate store, your own signing key, and if it was even performing that check, it will say, hey, it signs by a trusted country. Besides that, there are some more problems, because diplomatic means, they got to exist, otherwise you cannot exchange anything. And what about key exchange, for example, Israel to Iran? And both countries are using e-passports. Both countries are not signed up to the PKD. So checking those certificates according to this fallback mechanism is not possible. So what you can do to try, if errors are detected, you can create self-signed data. So I make my own key pair, my own certificate. I make my own passport data and assign it using my own key. And at that time everything is correct except that the key should not be trusted. And note that country keys are also self-signed. Peter Goodman from New Zealand made an excellent crypto tool called CryptLib, which makes it quite easy to automate very difficult cryptographic processes. So it's some kind of EPI to, in an easy way, implement crypto processes. So what we can do is write a chip with the Hello Kitty data you've seen in the movie. So we put it on here. And we say write. So this is the data including correct self-signing. So it reads the files and says it's a passport, because you can also have an ID, which is another type. And we now write the data. So here you see the index, and you see the security object, including the hashes and the signing. We see data group 1. And the last one is a large one, is the picture, which is a JPEG picture. All data is now set. And we can read it using Golden Reader tool. So now it's reading the data. This software also doesn't have a connection to the PKD, so they cannot check if the signature is trusted. And what you can see is that the hashes are correct. Yellow means okay in this case. And that the signature is also correct. So the only way to detect it, this is to compare the keys. This is the same story, but another passport content. Then, for example, in the Netherlands, they have chosen to use some more advanced security mechanisms. So they use active authentication here. That's also stored in one data group, which is called data group 15. And if you not write that data, it will be detected. So then we got a non-critical error. But all data groups are protected using hashes and a signature. But the index, which says which files are stored in the chip, is not protected. So what you can do is change the index and say that the file just isn't there. It is optional, so they cannot force to use it. For example, in Japan they are not using it. And if the file isn't there, you can also not check it. To see what will happen. That's another movie. So what you see in the upper right corner here is my ID. And and I read it, and of course it's a real one. And you see also that 15 is here. So you see that we got data group 1, this data. We got data group 2, this picture. And we got data group 15. And using data group 15, they checked if it's an emulator or a real passport. And yellow means okay, so it says active authentication is okay. Then I try to copy the data to another blank card. So first I read the original chip. And then I write it to another one. And this is an emulator, so the emulator should be detected. So now the data is written. And I read it again. And what we see right away is that something's going wrong here. So we got a non-critical error, the software continues. But we can detect that something went wrong. Then we can try to manipulate the index in such a way that it says that the file isn't there anymore and it cannot check it. So I implemented the tag in the script with a simple flag, so I can say strip it yes or no. And now it's stripping the anti-cloning mechanism from the index. So then we read my original document again. And again we write it to another chip. So this is the JPEG picture again, which is about 15 kilobytes. And then we try to read it again using the Golden Reader tool. And now something else is happening. What we see is that data group 15 isn't there anymore. So we only got 1 and 2, which are required, and all the optionals aren't there. So active authentication is not performed any longer. So the software can't tell us if this is a real chip or not. So what we're actually doing is downgrading the chip to a good one that is well protected to the most simple version around. So here again you see data group 15 is gone, active authentication is not used. The interesting thing is that this attack is also applicable to all other optional security features. Because only file 1 and 2 are required, and the rest, including security features, are optional. So in the European Union, they will start enrolling fingerprints next year. I can imagine that at one point in time there's an automated fingerprinting device which matches your fingerprint with the fingerprint stored in a chip. using this mechanism, you can also say, well, there's no fingerprint in it. So you don't have to perform that test. And these are some details. We'll not dive into every bit and byte, but over here you see the length of the data after disposition. This is 1.5. So these are 1.5 bytes. And the interesting part is here. It says we got three tags. The first one is 61. 61 is data group 1. Then we see 75, which is data group 2, the picture. These are required. And then we see 6F, which is the optional active authentication mechanism. So that's what's on the real one, this one. We change it. We say we got 1.4 bytes. We got two tags, only the required ones, and we write that in the chip. And what can be the impact? This is Europe, or part of Europe, and what you see in blue are countries which are what they call Schengen countries. So there's a Schengen agreement, and the Schengen agreement says that you can travel without a passport in the blue zone. There are a lot of countries on in the blue area, so this is where I live, approximately. It's the Netherlands. We got Germany. We got Poland, Spain, Portugal, a number of countries. And the question is, are all inspection systems 100% secure? So if there's one security flaw in one of these countries, then you got a problem in the entire blue zone. And then it's interesting to think again about nine countries out of 45 which shall sign up to the public key directory to automatically check the signatures. This is a summary. Most of the issues are implementation issues. The good thing is that they can be solved quite easily. Some of them are also design related. So for active authentication, we see this is a quote from the standard. When MRTD, which stands for Machine Readable Travel Document, with the optional data group 15 is offered to an inspection system, the active authentication mechanism may be performed. So in fact, you can make a system which doesn't check active authentication and you still comply with the standard, because you may do it. I think it should be performed. Then we got the index manipulation. The design is not okay. The file is not secured. The interesting thing is that the ICAO also documented this issue, but they rejected it. So they say you can also use the security object to know which files are stored on the chip. And that's true. And that's also a good fix. But the examples they use, the programming examples I showed earlier, shows a vulnerable example. And even in the same document, which describes or rejects the issue and describes a fix, there's also in the same document is also a vulnerable example which can be exploited. The root causes in design. Some security features are optional, so I think DKL did a good job with documenting different kinds of risk scenarios. And they also documented countermeasures. But in the standard, not all security features are required. So some countries may decide to implement the additional features, which is good. Some countries don't do it, and that's a problem. So for example, if you are not using active authentication, which is optional, you allow that clones can be made which cannot be detected using the documented security features. So for example, in Japan, they are using the PKD. So they are checking, or they might be checking if the signatures are okay. And if they implement that in a good way, they will detect the Hello Kitty passport. But they did not implement active authentication. So you can make a backup of your own passport chip, and that will be cannot be detected as an emulator. The second point is over here that passive authentication does not protect against index manipulation. For the tested implementation, they do not follow the standard. As said before, they don't have to. And that's what worries me most. So like the Dutch government, which is working on secure implementations, but not documenting what secure actually is. And as a result, some problems might reoccur in different countries. Every country is reinventing its own applet. Which we saw before is no good, because you can detect where a passport is from without authenticating. And a threat related to that is, for example, that you can make bombs, and that you want, for example, 10 people from the United States, and if there are 10, then you got an efficient bomb, so you go off at that time, and not if you got 5 or 6 or 9. The second point is reader bugs, so the inspection systems do not implement all security features. And that might, like we saw with some test inspection systems, might lead to false chips being accepted as genuine ones. And the last one is reintroducing hardware problems. So in the Netherlands, an old attack was to retrieve the active authentication key using power analysis. That is solved in the Netherlands. But what happens in other countries? Do they also know this threat? And did they also implement countermeasures? can we fix this? I won't go through all points, but the red ones are, in my opinion, most important. I think we should require all security features by default. So no optional mechanisms, but require everything. And the second red bullet is open standards and implementations. Because we all know that the security by obscurity is not working. Well, what will happen in the future? More biometrics will be added. So next June in the European Union they will add fingerprints. Also other information might be added, like iris scans or DNA or footprints, or there are lots of optional files which allow you to do that. The picture you see is another hobby of mine, is cloning fingerprints. And it might be very interesting if you can get access to data like fingerprints in a passport, that you can also regenerate the fingerprint that matches that file. Then if the system is implemented correctly, the system heavily relies on public key infrastructure. And for the last couple of years, I've been working as an ethical hacker. For internal networks, it never happened that we didn't break the security of the internal networks. So it might be interesting, if you're a criminal, to get a job at customs and to check if the systems are really secure. And since the risks are very high, criminals might be interested, and it's a business case to, for example, infiltrate in system network engineering at customs. So I think it's very important that one centralized PKD is there and is well guarded, well secured, well audited, etc. And in the end, it's just another software product. The setups we've seen are running Windows. They can also run another platform, but in the end, it's just a platform with the same bugs and exploits we've seen earlier. And one of the reasons for enrolling the system is to increase the rate of the number of people going through customs. So if the holiday season is starting, if the holiday season is starting, you can imagine that they might wait with patching the systems, because otherwise they will got to check all passports manually. The software is also using some advanced libraries for JPEG 2000 handling, for example. And Lucas Grunwald already showed that with putting some malformed header data in the chip, that you can crash test setups in the United States. Really scary scenario is that some exploits are found in the readout equipment. So for example, if it's connected and a SQL query is performed using the passport number, what will happen if your document number will be dropped table customs? Then I got an extra slide. which is not on on a conference CD. The Dutch government responded to the findings, and they said that systems will be enrolled next year, will be secure. Though they haven't got design criteria, Entrust, which is one of the major players on e-passports, they also responded to an article on the Register, and they said, quote, government security experts aren't dummies, and they aren't going to make those mistakes. I hope he's right. But I always say, trust but verify. And if I see what government security experts did in the last couple of, months, I think this is. Passports, visa stolen, grandmother flies on a husband's passport, MI5 computer stolen in burglary, secret computer files, prisoner governors and staff vanish. So this is, there are all links, so I will update this slide so you can also see the original articles. USB stick containing classified NATO info lost in Sweden. Passport, this is also a very interesting one. If you look at the previous presentation, there was a problem in the web application on which you could apply for, I think, visas. So what happened is if you queried some parameters in the web application, you can get access to data of other visas from other people. And the last one, also interesting, it was a government official with a Trojan on his machine, and they smuggled out data of 2,300 Oregon taxpayers. And to be continued, I don't hope so. But I think it's a good thing that we got some safeguards, we can check the design of the government, researchers can check, universities can check to see if there are any safeguards to guarantee that this process will be adequate. Any questions? No questions. There's one.
Could you ask the can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. The AA private key. If there's, you know, it was being attacked through a side channel attack through of hardware. I think that's what you have said. Was it because of the lack of robustness of the hardware itself, or was there lack of robustness of the key also? Is it just the hardware, or is it also the vulnerability of the key?
The vulnerability was related. Sorry, the vulnerability was related to the hardware itself, and not to the key. So what happened? Yes, it is an RSA calculation, and depending on if it's a 0 or a 1, This is a very simple version of it. If it was processing zero, it would do something like this in power consumption. If it was using a one, it's using that. So what I did, and this is time. So what they do is they made a trace of the power consumption of the chip, and then I think it's 1K, I don't know, I can dive into the details of the key, but the key has got a certain length, and for the length of this key they did this, and they were able to extract the key using this mechanism. And it's all hardware related. So it doesn't matter if you got a key from 8 kilobytes, then you can do still the same, but it takes longer to do so. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes, you answered my question. And a second question, the recent chips, you know, the latest chips are resistant to such attacks, according to my understanding. But the chips that were attacked, those were chips from the past. I mean, they were old chips, not the latest ones.
The chips that were attacked was back in 2005, and it was the first chips from the Netherlands. And I don't know if they also performed the same attack on chips from other countries, but it might be the case. I don't know. I'm not an expert on power tracing, but it might be that it's also applicable to chips in other countries, because if they didn't take countermeasures, yeah, the same attack will still work. But again, I'm not an expert on power tracing, so I didn't perform power tracing on chips at all. Does that answer your question? Huh? Some more questions?
I think it was the question about when. Was the chip old, you know, old technology chip, and that was why it was attacked?
No more questions? Then I would like to thank you very much for your attention. And if you're interested in some more background information, including the attack, for example, on the hardware, there are lots of links in my presentation. And these are some more articles on, for example, the PKI, and some other interesting articles, especially from ICAO, who published a lot about how everything's working. So if you're interested, click the links and see what you you can find what's interesting for you.